back together again, you and I, chatting it up midweek Wednesday style, November 6th, 2024, on Connecticut Today, where I offered some of my thoughts on the White House race decided the night before between Vice President Kamala Harris and former President Donald Trump. We welcomed for further analysis Sacred Heart University political science professor and scholar in residence, Dr. Gary Rose, Southern Connecticut State University political science and urban affairs professor, Dr. Jonathan Wharton, and Hearst Connecticut Media columnist and senior editor, Dan Hogg.
I have to laugh. Gene and Anthony, hang on. We'll get to you. Tim, you're up next. But I just have to laugh. I'm looking at this graphic on CNN. Latino men embrace Trump despite vows to deport millions. Listen. Can people in my business stop assuming that just because somebody is Latino or Puerto Rican or Mexican, just because they have brown skin, you have to assume what their attitudes are on immigration? My God, can people in my business stop that? Why? Just because somebody is Latino, they're for illegals? God almighty, the arrogance. The arrogance of that. Well, why did you vote for Trump? Well, you know, I like the fact that he's going to deport illegals. Yes, but you're Latino. You can. Oh, my God. The idiots in my business. And you wonder why half of America hates us at any given time. Tim in Hamden's here. Tim, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm okay. A serious note, and yeah. I'm dead serious about this.
Yeah.
The Unitarian Church in New Haven.
Yeah, I know. I know people who go there. In fact, yes.
The main sanctuary.
Yeah.
Is open till about six or so tonight for reflection.
Okay.
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 So yeah, let's see.
Okay.
Okay. You know, some people. I know an awful lot of people who were very, very upset on you know. And they're not Greens or anything else, but an awful lot of women.
Yeah.
And stuff. I'd like to congratulate George Logan for one of the worst-run campaigns. You actually went from a 2,000-vote deficit to a 20,000-vote deficit, had no event to close up, would not answer reporters' questions or anything else like that, didn't make yourself available.
How much of that, Tim, how much of that do you think, though, was the abortion issue, which was not hanging over that race 2 years ago?
A good amount, but it also, you know, it's like, really, why do I want to, you know, change horses? Why would I get something better out of this particular person who was even afraid to, you know, it's like, Mickey Moused around and said, you know, I don't want to say Trump, but all that sort of stuff. So I'm trying to, the strange thing I'm trying to figure out is how many people actually voted or didn't vote. And I see different statistics. I keep hearing all day that about 20 million people did not vote. And then I hear others saying, no, it's the record. It's same thing as 2020. I mean, Biden. Well, and one, sorry, I'm in the car. I can't look this up, but, you know, Biden won certain districts by a lot in certain areas.
Yeah.
And Kamala Harris, who had no campaign, couldn't answer a question, had no real anything along those lines, you know, just ran a terrible, terrible campaign.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think it's that 70. Is Trump at the same amount of votes that he got in the last election?
He's at, and Tim, I do have to run, thank you, but hold on, Tim, let me get that number for you. Well, Trump right now is at 71,958,000, which I think is about what he was at the last time around. Biden got like 80 million votes last night. She got 67 million. Yikes. Yeah. Well, listen, they're going to be parsing these numbers like crazy over the next few days. Open lines here if you want to jump in at 203-333-9422. Before the break, Gene in Stratford. Gene, good afternoon. How are you?
Good afternoon, Paul. How are you doing today?
I'm good, Gene. What's on your mind?
Well, in relation to why Trump won and she lost. I mean, okay. I think it's kind of like a mathematical equation with a lot of interesting components. The first one that really catches my eye is that I looked at my iPad at 2 a.m. and I channel 8 already concluded that it looked like Trump was going to be the winner.
Yeah.
And my eyebrows are raised because why in the last election did it take 3 or 4 days after to find out who was the winner? And I understand, you know, from sources that Trump's legal team did a lot of went through a lot of court hearings, and they made ensure that there were clear, decisive laws, and they were enforced. I heard that polling places, the door was locked at 8 o'clock. If the line was outside, it was locked, and no more ballots in after a certain point, which it really makes you wonder on how honest the last election was. But that's behind us right now. But you hit a lot of the key elements. I mean, I think the largest one is the failure of the border and immigration. Second being is the economy, and it's just incredible that it was kind of like a silent majority. You didn't hear a lot of see a lot of Trump signs, stickers, but I think, you know, Harris has to accept this not great economy.
Now, Gene, you're breaking up. Gene, you there? Gene, say again from Harris. You were breaking up, my friend. What were you saying about her?
I just say that she's got to be responsible and accept responsibility for situations we're in. She's part of the administration that has implemented these border policies and took down the construction of the wall and allowed a lot of people to come into this country, and a lot of money is flowing in that direction. And I think those were the largest ones. The abortion one was a factor. I don't think it was a larger one. Economy, border, but that one is an eyebrow raiser, how we counted everything.
Yeah. Gene, you're breaking up.
It would have been a red wave.
Yeah, Gene, I got to let you go. You're breaking up, my friend. Good to hear from you. Thanks. Now, to that point, Gene, as far as her being tied maybe at the hip to Joe Biden, there's an interesting opinion on that. Gene, thanks. Open phones. We'll come back and do more. 333-9422. But to Gene's point, I did notice something in prepping the show today. I will come back with that on WICC. On the day after both the Electoral College and the raw vote is returning the 45th president of the U.S. to be the 47th president of the U.S. Donald Trump, this time around, though, with J.D. Vance as his vice president. And he was doing a little TV work last night. We're fortunate to have him here right now. Dr. Gary Rose, one of our regular contributors, Sacred Heart University in Fairfield. Gary, good afternoon to you. And Gary, what on earth did we see last night? Wow. Wow.
Yeah. Oh, what a remarkable election. You know, when the results started rolling in, I was really surprised. And once again, you know, even though, the polls were suggesting that there was going to be 7 swing states and they could go either way, I mean, this election really just went one direction. And you know, you got to wonder what the pollsters were up to out there. So, no, it was an amazing election, and I don't think anybody predicted such a decisive victory. I mean, it could have gone either way, and it was supposed to be very close. But this was an election that really will be going down in history as a decisive Republican, you know, victory, and also the fact that it is now, you know, we have a president again who was at one, who ran now a second time after being defeated once, like Grover Cleveland did. So, you know, there's a lot of history and a lot of interesting dimensions to that election that we're all going to be talking about in the days ahead.
Yeah, and Gary, I think it really magnifies the power of some issues if enough people are akin to them. And, you know, we're talking about, in some way, shape, or form, immigration and also, the economy. And people, you and I have talked about this before, they don't want to hear these highfalutin Wall Street numbers. What does my cashier's tape at the supermarket say? And then after I spend way too money, they go home and they watch the video of people coming across the border. And I don't know whether they told her not to or whatever, but I don't think Ms. Harris, the Veep, I just don't think, Gary, she was as specific enough about those two hot button issues as she probably should have been.
I agree completely with you. And I think that's really a big part of what happened yesterday. And of course, all during the early voting periods too, is that people, you know, I'm not sure they were enamored, you know, with former President Trump so much as disappointed with, you know, Vice President Harris mm-hmm. in terms of her responses to so many of these issues. The two, of course, that you just raised, you know, regarding the economy and immigration. She never really had specific answers or sometimes not even any type of answer with respect to how she was going to, you know, address those problems facing the country. And then there's another issue, too, I should say, that I do think that, you know, because so much voting is really from the heart and mm-hmm. visceral, I think a lot of people just didn't like her and didn't want her as our nation's commander-in-chief. They didn't feel confident about her, and maybe, you know, when they listened to her speak, they just weren't enamored with her.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Gary, we've all worked, you know, sometimes I say elections reflect the workplace, and how many of us, Gary, have had co-workers, you know, and bosses over the years that we're really not enamored with, but you're like, yeah, but I get a paycheck because of him, or he's running the company, and I don't love the guy. I'm not going to have cocktails and cheese and crackers with him, but I'd rather have him than him or X and Y. You know what I mean?
Yeah, of course I do. Sure. And, you know, there was this also this this dimension to the Democratic Party that has emerged in recent years of sort of condescending on people who mm-hmm. you know, who don't agree with their views on a whole range of issues. And so not just economic or immigration issues, but other issues like the social and moral issues. And I think that turned a lot of voters off. And so, you know, I would say that I don't want to say that this was this major reaction to, you know, so-called wokeness. But there is a dimension of that that happened in this election. People just did not believe that the Democrats were, and particularly Kamala Harris, was out there representing their views on some of these issues.
Yeah, Dr. Gary Rose is with us. And, Gary, that exact point you bring up earlier, I read some paragraphs. If you can access the New York Times today, you know, their conservative columnist, Brett Stevens, he wrote exactly what you did. He said, and he's not some uber right winger. He's about the closest thing the Times has to a conservative. And he said, when is the Democratic Party going to realize that if somebody disagrees with you, you don't respond by being condescending to them? They will only take that for so much.
Yeah, I'm going to have to read that.
Yeah,
there was a certain smugness that emerged within this party, not just this election year, but even, you know, the last few years. And just so many working class Americans who are paycheck to paycheck, and they're not ideologues by any means, but they just didn't want to hear some of the things they were saying. And like I said, the kind of this talking down to a big segment of the American mm-hmm. people, that if they weren't in agreement with them on these issues, they were somehow, you know, Neanderthals or something. And so I think that was at work yesterday, too.
And James Carville, who's been very visible, there's a new documentary about him, Gary. He said what you said, almost the same thing, and a couple of things I saw him. And, you know, the older he gets, the better he gets, because he just doesn't care anymore what he says.
I know.
No, but seriously, Carville said, number one, he goes, we, meaning Democrats, he said, we don't talk to men anymore. Like, we've got to, it's okay to talk to men. And number two, and Gary, with all due respect to you, my friend, he said, a lot of our answers sound like faculty lounge bull. Mm.
He's 100% right.
Yeah, and he's, God bless him, he's right.
Yeah, he is 100% right sitting there. I know. And you know, it is true that a lot of this stuff becomes very abstract and theoretical and, you know, sort of really academic type discussion. And that's just not connecting with mainstream American voters out there. And when you have so many people who feel that the election's on the wrong track, and then you start talking to them this way, don't expect them to cast their vote for your candidate.
Now, Trump, he's got to get it done. Now, he has a different VP. He has J.D. Vance, who probably would likely succeed him either way, whatever happens. But, you know, Gary, he's got to get things done. The GOP will control the Senate, although the filibuster is still there. But if the Dems can, you know, flip the House, then that's a real monkey wrench here. And we may start to see, you know, governance by executive order here.
Well, that's why, yeah, executive orders have been on the rise, is because of gridlock. And it's, you're absolutely 100% right that presidents like Obama, remember Obama said, I have a phone and a pen, and he said, that's how I'll govern. And so, yes, that's right. And yeah, it's going to be, it could be gridlock. You know, there are some voters out there that maybe split their ticket. I think there was an awful lot of straight ticket voting, but you know, there are some out there, and again, maybe getting back to the faculty lounge discussion here, that maybe people, you know, are in, you know, in favor of a Madisonian type model of government where there is checks and balances and a lot of deliberation and where not everybody is on the same page. So maybe that's at work, I think, for some voters. Maybe they were thinking that along those lines if they split their tickets. But nevertheless, yes, you're absolutely right. I mean, they have the Senate. Trump has the Senate. That's big. And that's going to, of course, help with, in the event there's another Supreme Court appointment or what have you. And, right, the filibuster is not going to go away and all of that. I know Mitch McConnell was talking all about that. And nor are we going to see, you know, constitutional amendments now being proposed. And so all of that's going to stop. But yeah, the House could really be a serious issue. And we don't have the final numbers on that yet.
No. Gary, finally, I know you were busy yesterday and last night, and I would imagine today. Any interaction with your students today or not? Or are some happy or some walking around in a fog? What have they said to you today, if anything?
I didn't meet with them today.
Okay.
I got home last night at 2:30.
Oh, God.
2:30 in the morning. Yeah. And I just had a review session scheduled for today.
Yeah.
And I do have a CLA that is a classroom learning assistant. Uh-huh. So he's handling the review.
Excellent.
The test on Friday. And then I'm home. And I just have to recover and get some rest and get data, get all the data and all of these things so
yeah.
I can do more, you know, analyses on what's going on. And I had an interview early this morning too with a radio show, and so I didn't go down today.
Okay. Dr. Gary Rose, you deserve the day off. Dr. Gary Rose, Sacred Heart University Poli Sci Professor, Scholar in Residence. Gary, take care, we'll chat down the road. Thank you.
Okay.
All right, there you go. Dr. Gary Rose there, Sacred Heart, joining us right now for a little interpretation of what we saw yesterday and last night. Southern Connecticut State University Poli Sci and Urban Affairs Professor, Dr. Jonathan Wharton. John, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Good afternoon. How you doing?
Good. What did we see last night, John? Please put into words for my audience what happened in America last night.
Well, there's a lot to put into context, so I don't know where to begin with that, but it is interesting, I guess, to process. The first thing is beyond the electoral count, which everybody's obsessed about. We should be more concerned about that popularity vote number.
Yeah.
That's what really blew the roof off this time around, right? It was always this obsession about the Electoral College count, but then look what ended up happening with that. And one thing, of course, is that coattail effect with Congress. That's key. That's a textbook example of a candidate, whoever's at the top of the ticket, when you bring in and consider candidates running for the legislative branch. And by the way, same thing any time you have a gubernatorial candidate, a mayoral candidate, you've got that coattail effect for the legislative branch.
Mm-hmm.
That's a bigger deal than anything else. I know we're always obsessed about the presidency, the gubernatorialship, the mayoralship, but you can't exclude the legislative effect of this with Congress. That's so critical.
Yeah, absolutely, John. And you know, we have, even though there are some races yet to call, you know, the GOP does control the next session of the Senate. We know that. And the House is still kind of in doubt here. There is still some razor-thin races there. So I guess if you're the Democrats, you're saying, geez, if we can at least take the House back and reverse the loss that we're feeling in the Senate, we can at least maybe possibly slow Trump down here.
I think it's too late. I mean, it's just with the House, it should be a foregone conclusion at this rate.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I know a lot of people are blaming somebody like a governor, Kathy Hochul in New York, because that's a classic case example, right? So many Republicans got elected there. And boy, the National Party was livid with her. You can't blame them. I would be.
Yeah, for what she's. Yeah,
Democrat.
I mean, some of the stuff she was saying, John, I played back here on the show. I was like, is she serious? What is she doing?
Exactly. There's a total disconnect. I mean, say what you want about Cuomo, but he's like your classic textbook example of Machiavelli effect in terms of lining people up and getting the candidates together for the ticket and obviously being effective to make sure that they got elected even for Congress. But then what effect did you see of this when it comes to some of the Kathy Hochul. Now they're trying to figure out what to do about making up these seats, because they didn't lose nearly as many seats just as the Republicans thought could be possible there. You know, so it's quite interesting.
Yeah, and John, a few things in this campaign I've been talking about and all the interpretation, you know, one was, you know, when the White House is still debating where the apostrophe was, you know, where Mr. Biden talked about garbage and supporters of Trump. And then Vice President Harris's appearance on The View over a month ago, or right around a month ago, where she said, well, no, she wouldn't change that much about her and what the president did. John, do some of these politicians just forget about the power of a single word or sentence and how many times it's magnified by social media?
Well, I think some of that is minor. You know, you're going to have, your scuttlebutts and debates and issues. To me, that's very minor. It's more the major issues for me, Paul. I mean, the economy is a big factor when it comes to inflation. It's come through in every survey. I'm obsessed reading, going through the exit poll data. I'm still trying to figure that out. It's quite interesting. Because look what ended up happening for the support going Trump's way. I mean, yes, the usual more than 50% white women. That shouldn't be a surprise because it's been that way for a while.
Yeah.
Right? That always seems to be shocking. And, of course, yes, blame black men. We always get blamed. Fine.
Yeah.
The numbers were, the numbers for that, yes, it was higher than I thought it would have been. I thought it might have been, like the last time, maybe 8, 10%, maybe it would have been a little higher, 15%. It was more than 20%. But then look at the Latino men, almost half for Trump. It was like a little over 45%. That's amazing to me. So there's something to be said about the fact that, you know, the Democrats obviously have a lot of work to do. But it's not like that's no secret. They knew that. The quirk of this was the fact that they made the change up for having Harris to be on the ticket and deciding it before the convention in the middle of summer, as opposed to deciding this months ago, really speaks more to that and getting their ground game together, because you need to close ranks internally within the party before you do any kind of actual coalition building.
Sure. And John, one thing I kind of harped on here, and yeah, we talked about the time frame and they kind of had to go with her because all the money that was raised. Did she make a mistake, John, not doing regular traditional news conferences? She did these sit downs, but she didn't do one really kind of free form, 10 or 20 reporters shouting questions. She didn't do one. Was that a mistake or not?
I think it was. They were trying to protect her and keep her guarded. And anytime you do that with candidates, that can cause a real problem. And I'm just going to be anecdotal because I see this often with mayoral candidates at the very local level. And I experienced this even in New Jersey, especially with somebody like Cory Booker, where everything was scripted and planned.
Yeah.
And, you know, you got to be careful with all of that. You really do, no matter who you are as a candidate, because then you don't see the actual authentic self. And a lot of voters want to see that charisma effect when it comes to their actual policy and public official leaders.
Finally, John Wharton, if you're sitting in the office and you're counseling the Democrats on a national level, and after the dust dies all this, dust dies down and this, all things being considered, where does the party go from here? What should they do? What should they not do? Because now they're starting to bleed a little, as you say, with Hispanic men and black men and younger black men. Is this like a 5-alarm fire here or is not?
I have been stressing this over and over again, Paul, almost like a broken record. It's a generational consideration for all of us. We saw that. It came through over and over again for younger voters under 40, right? They feel like they've been left out of the process, both parties, by the way, because remember, there's a larger share, plurality of unaffiliated voters.
Yeah.
They've not been brought in really to either party. Sure, they might choose Trump in some instances this way, but they're still not officially even registered or even feeling tied to it. So they're still up for grabs, and that's going to be critical. Throw that in along with a lot of this dead weight the Democrats have. There are so many of these congressional lawmakers and, you know, a lot of actual party leaders who even somebody like the Clintons that still remain and hold on. And somebody like Barack Obama had no choice but to bring on Biden, and somebody like Harris could not get away from somebody like Biden. You can't escape the Biden-Clinton machinery. And so there's got to be something to be done about that. And I think this wake up for Congress is critical for somebody like Nancy Pelosi, obviously, and somebody like Chuck Schumer.
Absolutely. Good to have you on. Southern Connecticut State University poli-sci and urban affairs professor, Dr. Jonathan Wharton. John, great to chat with you. We'll chat down the road. Thanks, man.
Great. Thanks, Paul.
Appreciate it, Dr. Jonathan Wharton. Dan Haar, Hearst Connecticut Media, is with us. Mr. Haar, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Well, I'm okay. I'm not really – Dan Haar is not really the person you're talking to. It's just Dan Har's voice.
Got it.
And somebody else is controlling what I say.
Well, listen, there are all, you know how government works. There's always advisors, Dan, and people, you know, advising.
We should be so lucky that Barack Obama is running the government.
Well, I'm sure that people like Bob Woodward and all those people, Dan, you know as well as I do, they're working on the books right now, right? You and I know.
Barack Obama is hanging out in his $19 million house on Martha's Vineyard.
Yeah.
He's not running the government. If he were running the government, we wouldn't call that a conspiracy. We would call that effective management.
Is that what they call it now? Anyway.
I would.
All right.
I would.
You've got an interesting story here. Connecticut voices tell us 9 reasons why Trump beat Harris in the election. Where'd you go for this story? Tell us about this.
I wrote 8 reasons, fell asleep, and woke up in the morning and added a 9th.
Did you?
True story. Yeah. Yep. If you go in the Wayback Machine, you'll see 8 reasons.
Okay.
Where did I go? Well, this was partly from my conversations on Election Day.
Uh-huh.
And it was partly from my conversations over the week-long 6-day blitzkrieg across the state to talk to voters.
Yeah.
And it was partly at 1:08 a.m. I was talking with a friend on the phone, and you know, as you know, all left-leaning people are distraught, and everybody's just talking to each other, being distraught. And I get out of the, I went to the local convenience store before going home.
Yeah.
to grab something to eat, and yeah. I talked to a guy who was a Brazilian immigrant, not voter. He's a citizen,
okay.
But he's never voted in the U.S., but he had a lot to say about this election, and a lot of my column was based on not what he said, because any one person is not the sort of definitive point, but he congealed a lot of things that I had heard anyway over the past month, and largely we're talking about both – you can put things in 3 buckets,
yeah.
Right? Why did she lose? Let's put it in 3 buckets,
okay.
Right? Bucket number 1 is the candidate. She wasn't good at deflecting criticism about inflation. She
mm-hmm.
wasn't good at clarifying her position on woke issues, especially transgender athletes.
Yeah.
And she wasn't good at explaining what she did and what she didn't do at the border. Right. And so those are, you know, that's something about the candidate.
Okay.
She also couldn't answer questions. Right. And that's one of my reasons. She simply can't answer a question. You ask her a question. You ask me a question. I'll give you an answer. Maybe a little long, but it won't be convoluted, and in her case, they are convoluted.
Yeah.
The second category of issues are the voters, right? Who are these 50, 70 million people that will choose a rapist felon over a flawed Democrat? Both, by the way, both in the mainstream. These are not extremists. Donald Trump is not a policy extremist, and
no,
neither is Kamala
no,
Harris.
No.
That's silly talk. So that's another question. And the third is the system. How did it come to be mm-hmm. that Kamala Harris got anointed and you know, she didn't have a lot of time. That's not anybody's fault, but that's one of the reasons I put in there. So you put it all together, somewhere in there you have multiple tipping points.
Interesting, interesting. So, you know, you kind of got into it, Dan, but you got into it from the angle of why. But really, in a kind of a macro thing, what did we see last night? Did we see an America that says, listen, I know the guy that is going to eventually win this thing. A lot of people, I have callers, Dan, who say the guy's a dirtbag, but I like his policies. Is that where we are right now?
Well, there are a confluence of 2 things, right? One is, events conspired, and I don't use the word conspire in the same way as, you know, conspiracy.
Yeah.
Events came together to make the Biden presidency look much worse than it will look in history, right? Because the 2 great pieces of legislation, it was called the Inflation Reduction Act, but essentially it is a massive long-term investment in technology mm-hmm. to bring us to a future of a non-fossil fueled exclusive future, right? And don't give me this garbage about Biden shutting off the oil drilling. Biden broke the record for fossil fuel, but that's one thing that didn't happen yet, right? He passed this massive piece of legislation and the Infrastructure Act, the 2 twin things that didn't happen yet. So we haven't seen the benefits, but we've seen the cost. Right. And the second thing is inflation, which Donald Trump has had as much to do with as Joe Biden, because Donald Trump overspent the budget by $3 trillion before COVID, and he also dismantled the global trade system with tariffs and pulling out of trade deals. So therefore, we had a problem with the supply chain. All of these things conspired to make this administration look worse. And on top of that, you had a chaotic process in which Biden exited the race. So that's really what voters saw. They see prices.
Yeah.
They see prices. No one is able to, you know, even an economist isn't able to say, well, if chicken costs $6.99 a pound, it used to cost $3.99, why is that happening?
No, you're right. And the great part now, Dan, is we can all focus on the governor's race.
Let's talk about – I talked to the governor yesterday about that.
Yeah.
And I said to the governor when in Meriden, he was there with Miguel Cardona, who's visiting his own home elementary school where he went.
Yeah.
And I said to the governor, you know what tomorrow is, right? And he said, what? And I said, it starts the 26th cycle. Are you
running? Excellent. What did he say?
He didn't even grace me with a syllable of response.
Oh.
He just looked at me and he kept his mouth shut. But most people think that where he previously was saying maybe, just to not be a lame duck, the betting is he's now saying maybe, and he means it. He really might want it. But remember, something else happened yesterday.
Yeah.
He has the House gained a veto-proof majority. Because the House is picking up between 3 and 5 seats,
depending on
how the races go with Michelle Cook in Torrington and the Southington Plainville race.
Oh,
those are two up in the air. But even if you don't include those, the House has a net change of 3, which leads to at least 101, which is a veto-proof majority.
Ah, so his power reined in a little. Dan Harhurst, Connecticut Media. Dan, excellent stuff as usual, and we'll chat next week. Thank you, sir.
Great to talk to you. I'll decide which person is pulling the strings when I talk next
week. All right. Thank you, Dan. Dan Harhurst, Connecticut Media.